Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze.
Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two, that's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're rocking with you until noon. Then we will hand it off to D-Lo and KC. A little bonus NFL content for you. Coming up here on 102.5 FM HD2 The Bet. 1 o'clock p.m. on Saturday, we're carrying the Steelers at the Ravens. That'll be a fun one. Also want to remind everybody that we are your exclusive home for the college football playoffs. And on Friday, Friday, we will have number 10 Indiana at number 7 Notre Dame. That should be a ton of fun. And then on Saturday, we will have a triple header of college football playoff action that begins at 9 a.m. So if you're driving around and you're looking for play-by-play, we got it for you here on ESPN 1320. Speaking of the Kings, we've been talking about a lot today. We've been talking about it a lot every day, but we have a couple of tickets to give away.
Oh?
In fact, we have 5 pairs of tickets to give away. You can win a pair of tickets to the Miami Heat against the Sacramento Kings at Golden 1 Center on January 6th. It's this easy to enter. You want some free Kings tickets? Here's how you enter. Go to ESPN1320.com. You'll see the entry form. You're going to fill that out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're entered.
Then you're entered. That's all
you have to do. You don't have to leave a voicemail. You don't have to call the show. You don't have to do anything like that. You can just enter online, ESPN1320.com, and give it away 5 pairs of tickets to the Heat and Kings game on January 6th at Golden 1 Center. 916-909-1320. 916-909-1320. That's the Elk Grove Kia talk line. If you'd like to jump in on this Kings trade discussion, would you put Keegan Murray on the table? I don't think I would right now.
I'm not either.
I think it's, for me, it's something that they should be considering more than they probably would have or should have at this point last year, if the right move is out there. But I'll go back to what I said at the end of the last segment. What I don't want to see is more inaction. That would be frustrating for me.
Okay.
I have concerns that Kevin Huerter and Trey Lyles and a future protected first. Are going to move the needle much in what looks to be a busy trade market.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the disadvantage the Kings are in. I don't think that, like, Huerter or Lyles have negative trade value. Again, Herter's on a contract for $16.9 million this year, and I think it's like $18 next year. Trey Lyles is an expiring contract at $8 million. Like, they're not negative value players, but that's the deal. Like, when you're trading those guys, it's not with the expectation that you're going to get a bunch of value for them as much as it is you're going to be able to match salary, and then whatever you're giving is on top of that.
Yeah.
And that's a tough thing. What is on top? You know, what is the real crux of the deal? What is it that would make a team that is either starting over or trying to get better right now, what would make them take on those players?
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it's not like if you were to make a deal, those players would go and play for that team. And that's totally fine. I mean, Kevin Huerter could even be moved again down the road for another, like, pick situation. But that's it. What the Kings are offering, it has to come with something else. And that's what people should know. Like, the 2027, 2028, 2029, 2030. You know what? Like, I Chris Choa brings up this, but I also saw in the chat, somebody else brought up, hey, just go get Bam.
Yeah, and, just do that.
Yeah, yeah. And, oh, that was Chris Choa again.
I think he was making fun of that trade that Heat fans put out that was like De'Aaron Fox for a bunch of randos on the Heat.
Yes.
Like, come on.
Now, cool.
We'll just do the Heat best player for a bunch of randos on the Kings. Here you go.
Exactly. And
easy work.
I don't know that, like, again, that if the Miami Heat decide to blow it up, which is always a possibility because they've been good, but they're not great. And, you know, they always have something up their sleeves. They're a quality franchise, one of the best franchises. But if they were to ever put Bam Adebayo, that's where you're like, okay, I'm definitely looking at Keegan Murray. I'm definitely looking like matching salaries plus Keegan Murray plus whatever first round picks at 27 and 29 and 31. Okay. Three first round picks. That's what I got. It's going to you. That's what I got.
Yeah.
So if Bam ever became available, because that would do a couple of things. Number one, it would give you a Twin Tower situation and a great defender to go alongside Sabonis. But it would also give you the passing big when he steps off the court. It would also give you the tie with Monk and with Fox because they all played together in Kentucky for one season. It would be like if you could go get a player out there, it might be the perfect player to go get to make sure that you kept your core in place for the next 5 years or 7 years.
Is Keegan Murray still part of the core?
He is. Like, I fully think he is. And I always, like, we bring this up a little bit. I do worry a little bit about the ramifications if you were to trade Keegan Murray. Because Keegan
is... Yeah, it's a risk for sure.
Well, it's a risk because he could go be a great player somewhere else. But it's also a risk because he's very, very close to De'Aaron Fox.
Mm.
And, like, this is, like, upsetting the apple cart. Fox has always been someone who sort of compartmentalizes these things, at least like in public. Like if you talk to him about it when it came to Malik Monk, it's like, how much you want Monk back? Oh, I want him back a bunch, but I also want my buddy to go get as much money as possible.
Yeah.
If that's what happens, if he goes and makes a bunch of money somewhere, then I'm happy for him and I'm not going to take away from, you know, him. I want him to go be happy. And so Fox has always been able to like compartmentalize, even like the Harrison Barnes, like how much you really wish that he was here. Yeah, love Harrison Barnes. He's a big culture piece. But Harrison Barnes and I are going to be friends the rest of our lives. You know, just because he's not here in the locker room doesn't mean he's not going to be. I think Keegan might be a little bit different because of like how they've brought him into their family.
Yeah.
But
again, and this gets back to this whole discussion, and I want to move on. I want to get to a different aspect of this Keegan thing. But again, and I want to make this clear. This is two guys talking on the radio. We were messing around with the trade machine this morning, but this isn't reporting. But that's where I want to be clear. For me, if Keegan's on the table, it's in a deal that makes the Kings demonstrably better right away.
Yeah.
It's for a deal where, yeah, De'Aaron might not like to see his buddy go, but man, you know what? They're going to start winning a lot of games. I'm not putting him on the table for just anybody. On a more realistic note, because I wouldn't bet on Keegan Murray getting traded. I guess this slides in parallel to the Brock Purdy conversation. Because I think at the end of last year, the 49ers were probably like, yep, we're ready to give Brock Purdy a top of market contract. We think we can win a Super Bowl with him. 60, 61, 62, 65, whatever he winds up wanting, we'll pay him.
Yep.
But then this season plays out and you see some regression. It's like, all right, well, you're still going to pay him. You still keep him. But is he a $60+ million quarterback? Can you build a winner around him with that? At that contract? I think Keegan Murray is kind of falling into the same realm. Where when his rookie scale extension comes up, you're paying him. But I think that contract looks different now than it would have if he was eligible after last year.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why DeMar DeRozan, age 35, just signed a 3-year, $75 million deal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you score at the NBA level, you're going to get paid. You don't score at the NBA level and become a fifth option, you're not going to get paid nearly as much. And that's where, again, like take Cam Johnson's current stats and just throw them out the window, like the 18.8 points per game that he's averaging. Just look at his career path and then match it up next to Keegan Murray's with the, like, you can line them up. Mm-hmm. Like, statistically, and that's when you start to look financially, what does Keegan's next contract look like? And maybe the Kings are willing to just do a max money deal, because you go back to last season and almost every rookie scale contract got picked up. Well, all of the guys who were like playing well, even like Jalen, is it Green? Not Jalen.
Yeah, Jalen Green.
Yeah, for the Rockets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He still got like a 3-year, $100 million deal.
Yeah.
He just didn't get the 5-6 year deal. Well, mm-hmm. the 5-year deal.
Yeah.
Like onto, and it's usually what it is a 5-year deal tacked onto your final year of your contract. So you're literally going like either going to be with that team until year 8 or year 9, depending on the length of contract. And so for me, it's a little complex, right? Like, what do you do with Keegan? And there has to be some honest conversations about, like, look, what is the value? What is the market value? You can't just pay a guy $30 million because, you know, this is sort of the Tobias Harris thing. You just can't pay a guy who's not an all-star money forever.
Right.
Just because you don't have another option and you think he might get there.
Right.
Like, that's not the way this works, so...
And all those guys that I would have to go look and refresh my memory, but I'm pretty sure all the guys who got those big rookie scale extensions are like primary scorers.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I understand that there's more to basketball than that. But when you go look at all the highest paid dudes, almost every single one of them is a scoring type of player.
I told you that the Matt Harpering story. Matt Harpering was like a really, really good player, like jack of all trades, like a guy that you want in your rotation for the Utah Jazz forever.
Yes.
Like a Jaime Jaquez, right?
Mm-hmm.
A guy who does everything. And he said, hey, I'm going to be a free agent at the end of the year. And so I went for it. And he went out and scored a bunch of points. Was totally inefficient as a player. Was not nearly as efficient as he had been as a player. Some of his other stats also hurt. But he went out and did that for 1 year, got paid, and then said, okay, I'm going to go back to being the player that I am.
Just to your point here, he was 8.2, 4.0. These are points per game. 11.1, 11.8, 17.6, 16.2, 14, 12.5, 11.6.
Got his money.
Got paid.
That's the way the league works.
Yep.
If you like Malik Monk, signed a 2-year, $20 million deal with the Sacramento Kings. He put up points. He got a 4-year, $78 million deal.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Like, that's like he made, like, it's 2 times a year length of contract, but 4 times the value of the contract. And, like, it's tough, but I don't know what to tell Keegan. Like, because you want your players to be motivated by this, to be motivated to be better and everything else. And Keegan's not someone who's going to be like, he's not chasing the money, right? Mm-hmm. He's not that guy. But you also have to like, where do I fit into this world with the Kings?
Sure.
And it's not easy because for the next 2 years, you're fitting in as like, maybe your best role is to come off the bench. Maybe, but they can't afford that.
A fifth option on offense who's good at defense doesn't make $30+ million.
No.
And it appears that's going to be his role on the team moving forward.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested to see how the Kings handle that, because if that's what he's going to be, and it looks like that's what he is, that's fine. This is not an insult. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
But that means his contract is going to fall into a different tier, because when it was $30+ million, that's when we all looked at Keegan Murray and went, oh man, if he's going to develop as their number two scorer, and it's going to be Fox, and it's going to be Murray with Monk off the bench and Sabonis distributing, and oh my God, everybody watch out. And as he gets into his third year, and it looks like that's not really going to be there, that contract number changes.
Yeah, the ramifications of Malik Monk moving into the starting lineup, I mean, it basically doubled down on the addition of DeMar DeRozan.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, DeMar, like, is going to take away from what Keegan Murray does offensively. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to. Like, if Keegan's hitting his 3-point shots, he's still averaging 15 points per game.
Sure.
Like, it's not even
but
like...
And this is a question we may not ever know the answer to this.
Yeah.
But is there a correlation with he doesn't handle the ball as much, the way the offense moves, where he's getting his shots, how he's getting his shots. Is that changing? Is that playing a role in the fact that he's shooting a career worse? I'm sorry, I was on the wrong thing. That he's shooting a career worst 3-point percentage, and having his worst offensive season.
Yeah, well, it's a chicken or the egg, because I can tell you, if he was hitting his threes early in the season, there probably wouldn't have been a move to Malik Monk going into the starting lineup. And so, like, look, I'm more mean with
DeRozan.
Oh well, yeah, yeah. I mean,
the
stats say the Keegan's missed wide open shots. Like, wide open shots. He's not hitting.
But to me, my question is that a product of, it went from this, he was shooting on the move and he was getting dribble handoffs and he was doing all this other stuff, to, okay, you go hang out in the corner and you watch the game, and when it comes to you, you got to shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not touch the ball for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 possessions. Or you may not get a shot for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 possessions. And you're like, oh, wait, no, it's your turn. You hoist.
Yeah, that's a problem that I've seen.
And again, we may not ever know, but it seems to me that would have a larger impact than anything else.
Well, I mean, he's expending a ton of energy as a rebounder and a ton of energy as a defensive player. And so it kind of makes him into a 3-point set shooter. And you got to hit the shots. Like, again, I would like to tell you, like, if he just look at the shot attempts he takes per game, and if you added 10% to his shooting percentage, what would he be averaging points per game? Probably 2.9 or 3.3 points per game. I mean, I don't think that the mathematical equation is sitting there. And
this is, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
This is kind of interesting. His 3-point attempt rate is down. It's 49%. Less than half of his shots are threes.
Okay.
His usage rate is also a career low right now.
Of course.
And that's what I was kind of getting at.
Mm-hmm.
Is I wonder if that's having an adverse impact on when he does get the ball, which again calls into question what is his role on this team?
Yeah. No, it's tough, man. I don't know like how you assess this if you're a GM.
No clue. Like,
I don't know. And that's what's really tough.
Are you surprised at all by DeMar DeRozan's role, by the way? You brought that up. You brought up his role earlier, and I just kind of shifting gears. I'm a little bit surprised he's as involved as he is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is, like, he's not ready to give up the ghost yet. Like, this is, I don't know. Am I shocked? No, because this is who he's been throughout his career.
Yeah, yeah.
But at 35, like, there almost has to be a changing of mentality here at some point, especially if you're not successful this season. Mm-hmm. If you continue to not be successful, if they continue to lose like this, then yeah, you need to rebalance this thing and you need to actively do it. Like, hey, look, this is what we're doing. I need you to drop in shot attempts per game, and I need him to raise up, because what we can't do is just stop developing a player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's tough.
16.7 shots per game for DeMar DeRozan. Half less than he was taking last year. He was at 17.2 last season.
Okay.
But in 2.3 more minutes per game.
Yeah, but I'd also look, like, Sabonis's shot attempts per game are up. Like, there's a reason why. And again, if Keegan Murray was knocking down 41, 42% mm-hmm. from three, then he's getting way more looks than he is right now.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to be looking for him all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, all of a sudden Sabonis is at 13.2. I think last year he finished at 12.9 shot attempts per game. Keegan Murray is only down like 0.7 shot attempts per game, I believe. I think last year he's right at 12.
Yeah.
No, he's at 12.7. So he's down 1.4 shot attempts per game.
Mm.
And of those, one of them straight up is coming from the 3-point line. Last year he's at 6.6. This year he's at 5.5. So actually 1.1 of his 1.4 shot attempts per game have come right off the top of his 3-point shooting.
Can we shift gears briefly?
Yeah.
916-909-1320, 916-909-1320. Before we shift gears, let's head out to New Jersey where our guy Mitch is patiently waiting. Mitch, what's going on?
How you guys doing?
Doing great.
Good.
Yeah. sure the trade that the Golden State made, you could trade the guy I wanted, you know, since last year, DeAnthony Melton. He's out 3 years, but they trade him for, they got a starter, I think, in Schrader. I wish we could do that. Maybe we can give them a player, somebody on injured reserve, like Carter, and get Cam Johnson, and, you know, 3-2s and 4-3s and 5-4s. We got to do something. We got to do something pretty quick.
Yeah, no doubt. Thanks, Mitch. Appreciate you. Yeah, I think Devin Carter is going to be a topic of discussion more as the trade deadline draws closer. And again, that's not till February. The DeAnthony Melton trade worked because he's an expiring. That's why they were interested.
Yeah, and DeAnthony Melton's out for the year, like Mitch said. But, I mean, that's just straight up, you know, it's like almost like the Trey Lyles contract. You know, like there's not much difference between the. I think Melton was at like $10 million last.
Yeah, they
like
just they wanted the expiring money.
Yeah, they wanted the expiring money, and they more importantly, they wanted the two extra second round picks they got out of that deal.
Yeah,
and they looked at Schroeder and said, "Can we get more for him?" I had some conversations with other people around the league, and they're like, "Look, there just wasn't a huge, robust market for him. There was no first-round pick for Dennis Schroeder. So trading 2 seconds for him, like, made sense for them.
Sure.
And it's the same thing, what was it, Trey Jones last year. Like, Washington tried to trade him, like, in the second, like, leading up to Tyus Jones.
Yeah.
Leading up to the trade deadline, they tried to trade him, and the best they could get was, like, a second. They weren't even getting 2 seconds or a late first. They thought they would probably be able to get a first for him.
Which is shocking.
Shocking.
It's so weird how the league views players versus how we view players.
Yes. And they're like, look, he's a nice guard, but we don't think he's a starter. Like, and are we going to pay him $10 million a year moving forward? I don't think so.
Man, and I just feel like he could have helped some teams last year.
No, I think he could have totally helped some teams. I think he could have helped the Sacramento Kings last year. Yeah. Like, it's just a very, very good player. But sometimes you need to assess the market, and you look and you shop it as much as you can, and you go, okay, this is what we're going to get for him.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the Nets are at a very close point where they're like, okay, look, Cam Johnson might not average 18.8 points per game for the rest of the season. He might drop right back down to 14, 15 points per game. Mm-hmm. We might want to sell high.
Yeah.
And hope that that it makes sense for some other team. But even like if the Kings were going to go get him, I don't expect Cam Johnson to average 18.8 points per game.
I'd be shocked.
I'd be shocked if he averaged more than 13 or 14.
Yeah, right.
He'd be coming off the bench.
His role's going to be different.
Yeah, his role would be different. He would be coming off the bench.
Cam Johnson coming off the bench would be great.
Yeah.
That would just, man.
It would be.
I would feel so much differently about the Kings if they had Cam Johnson coming off the bench.
I agree, but the cost is going to be Kevin Huerter. And if Kevin Huerter is playing like he was a week ago, then at the same time, you're like, okay, well, that's. You're losing basically the same type of productivity.
I think you can make up for it. You have the offensive firepower to make up for it. I think what he adds defensively,
I agree,
would be extremely helpful. Let's get back out to the Elk Grove Kia talk line, 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320, and it's Don. Don, you are on the Insiders with Kyle and James. What's up?
What's up, fellas?
Hey, Don.
Good, thank you.
If you're on the phone right now, I'm talking to you. What's up? Oh, that's my bad. Go ahead, Don.
can you guys hear me?
Yep, I got you. I had the wrong thing turned on. We're good.
I was over here talking to myself. Anyway,
my bad.
The ongoing joke with Monty McNair has always been, what guard is he going to draft? And it's not really a joke anymore now that we've needed wing depth for I don't know how long. And so if he doesn't make a move and Kings kind of just keep going at the rate they're going and end up in the play-in, do you think his feet warms up at all, or just kind of see what he does this offseason?
Talking about Monty?
Yes, Monty McNair.
Perfect. Thanks for the call, Don. Appreciate you. Yes. I think every seat heats up in the building if they are a play-in exit again.
Or if they don't make the playoffs, I think every seat right now is already feeling it.
Yep.
I think every seat is already like...
Yep.
Like, maybe not the seat, but you certainly your feet, you're starting to feel it. Like, you're like, okay. It's like, getting a little warm up in here. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So losing a game to Denver where you could have gone over 500, like that's a big game. It's a big loss and it's a big missed shot. And like all of it, it doesn't feel good for anybody. But specifically the guys who have built this team, the guys who are coaching this team, who are trying to piece this thing together and make something positive. It's a very, very
Man, that one hurt.
Difficult situation.
That one hurt bad.
Yeah.
Luckily, got more winnable games.
That's right.
He's got to go get him. All right. We were going to shift gears, but now we got to shift to pay some bills. We will do that. And when we get back, I'll tell you how the 49ers can still win the NFC West. Plus, it's an insane scenario. I'm excited to tell you all about it. Plus, my favorite NBA stat that I've been keeping track of. We'll get into that as well. With the handoff, I believe Kenny Caraway going to be in for the handoff today, coming up in about 20 minutes. That's James. I'm Kyle. We'll be back in a second here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Somebody said they saw a King's trade idea where it was Herter and Lyles for Simone Fontecchio and Isaiah Stewart from the Pistons. And so we were looking at Fontecchio, who's struggling this season, shooting 39.2% from the field, averaging 6 points, three boards. He's shooting 34.5% from three. Shot 40% from three on five attempts a game last year. But he's also 29 years old and going backwards, which isn't great.
He's 29?
Yeah, 29. The thing that bothers me with him and the thing I can't get out of my head is that he's the exact type of player the Kings would trade like a second round pick for.
Just hoping
and
to
call
see if
it good.
Works. Yeah.
Like, yeah, we just threw this guy at the end of the bench. See how it goes. I love the Isaiah Stewart idea, though.
I don't think you want to be a poor man's Nemanja Bjelica.
Boy, you sure don't.
I mean,
I wouldn't hate to be Nemanja Bjelica.
I like Nemanja Bjelica.
But the off-brand Nemanja sounds tough.
But that's kind of what it is, right?
It sounds like it.
Like the generic version of?
Yeah. Yeah, 6'8", 210, just turned 29. Like, I'm
yeah,
out.
That's
I'm
tough. Oh, no, and he makes 7.7 this year and 8.3 next year.
Yuck. I'm out. Ooh. I'm done with that trade. I don't want it anymore. I don't want that trade anymore.
Would you do Isaiah Stewart and Malik Beasley on a one-year deal?
Oh, my God, yes. Okay. I love Malik Beasley, though.
I think he's a little odd. Like, I don't know.
How so?
I don't know if he's a... like he's bounced around the league enough that you have to worry about like locker room type stuff.
Okay.
But I don't know. He can score.
Yeah, you can shoot the hell out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And Isaiah Stewart and Malik Beasley, for those two guys, I would do that.
Yeah, I mean, you're just going to have to give them something. And I don't know. Like, I'm not giving up a first round pick in that deal.
No, I'm not. I'm not either. I've been on the like F them picks train. I'm not doing it in that deal.
No, especially for a team that isn't looking to get way better. They're looking to balance, and I don't know. That's
the other player we were talking about at the break. Kyle Kuzma has come up a couple of times. Somebody in the chat, I think it's our guy Aaron, in the chat wanted Jonas Valanciunas and Kyle Kuzma, get him in here. And we can talk about the merits of that, but it leads me to my favorite NBA stat of the year.
Okay.
The Washington Wizards, your Washington Wizards, are 3-21. And they started the season 2-2.
Yeah, they just don't care.
They're 1-19 since starting the season 2-2.
Yeah.
Here's my single favorite thing about their 21 losses. Of their 21 losses, their lowest margin of defeat, their closest loss of the year was 9 points.
Oh.
They lost to the Spurs 139-130 back on November 13th. That was their closest loss of the year.
Mm.
They just lost to the Celtics by 14. Before that, they lost to the Cavs by 10. Memphis by 28. They beat the Nuggets somehow. Jordan Poole went off in that game. That's what happened. They lost to the Mavs by 36. They lost to the Cavs by 31. It's just night in, night out. They're just getting mollywopped.
Oh, man. Yeah, like, but go ahead and trade for some of their players.
28-point loss, 20-point loss to the Pistons.
It's funny how you view players, though, right? Because if you take, again, you take Cam Johnson's stats, you take Kyle Kuzma's stats, you put them side by side, you put their contracts side by side, all of it side by side. You feel so much better about Cam Johnson playing,
not even close,
playing for the Nets and fighting than you do Kyle Kuzma playing for the Wizards and being like part of the stink of that franchise on you.
Yes.
Like, I don't want this. That's part of it. Like, even Valanciunas going there, man, that's a risk. Yeah, you're getting the 3-year 30, but that's a risk because now you have the stink of that franchise on you. And like, what does that mean? Can you get another job? And I don't know.
My question with Kuzma specifically, I think Valanciunas would be fine. I think he'd be a really nice backup big.
Yeah.
You can start him. You can mess around starting him with Sabonis. That's fine. My issue with Kuzma is about whether he would be able to accept his role. And his role on this team would be probably a bench guy. He's very likely coming off your bench. Not going to play a ton of defense. A good scorer. You put the ball in the hoop. But is he going to be willing to do that coming off the bench? 20 minutes a night? And if he's not, is it more of a detriment than a help? That would be my, if I was going to trade, if the Wizards call and say, hey, we have this great deal for you, you take Kyle Kuzma and Jonas Valanciunas and your Monty McNair, and it's a couple of second round picks and the salary stuff that you need to match.
Carter, Lyles, Colby Jones, Jordan McLaughlin, and you're right there.
Right, and let's say no picks, and you're like, hey, you know what, this makes us better.
Maybe a second or two.
I would need to sit down with Kyle Kuzma and figure out, hey, this is your role. How do you feel about this?
Okay.
Because that's my concern. In a vacuum, help the Kings? Like, yeah, no doubt.
That would have been my concern any other year before this, that you're going to sit down with Kyle Kuzma and say, okay, look, what are you, can you fit in? I think right now Kyle Kuzma is like a kid in the back seat of a car that's being abducted and like is writing help me and fog on the window. Like, please get me out of here is where I'm. If I'm Kyle Kuzma, if he's not feeling that way, I don't want him at all. I don't want him anywhere near my team if he's not. Please get me out of
here. I will take whatever role to get out of Washington.
I promise I'll be good. Please get me out of here. Like, and not only that, but the other thing I'd say about Kyle Kuzma is because of his declining scale contract and the fact that he can score, I think you're always going to be able to trade him afterwards. Like, if we're looking at Kevin Huerter's value, like, he's got one more year on his contract than Kevin Huerter does, but the last year of his contract is $19 million. Like, you're seeing a very good declining scale contract that teams will go, okay, I would take 2 years of Kyle Kuzma in a trade that may or may not make me better. And I think he could come in and be like a very, very good super sub. Like, be that guy that, I mean, you'd play big minutes at the 3 and the 4. He can play both. Like, so I don't want to get talked back into Kyle Kuzma because I don't know
why you're doing it right now.
But like the Valanciunas saying, I'm like, okay, go get me with Valanciunas. I'm in because the athleticism, the strength, the just like he's a mean dude in the middle.
Yeah,
of
it gives you a little nastiness.
He does. And Valanciunas, again, I don't think he's the player he was before, but he's also very close to Domantas Sabonis. They play for the Lithuanian national team together.
Sure.
Like, these are dudes that know each other very well that have played together before. I don't think you can steal more than like 2 or 3 minutes a half with both of them on the court. But maybe, especially
if you needed
Sabonis
to try a two big lineup, I would way rather try Sabonis with Valanciunas than Sabonis with Len.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. Yeah. Well, that, and I think that you can have Sabonis shooting threes like from the perimeter.
And Valanciunas will put them up too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the idea, but again, I would really need to make sure that Kyle Kuzma wants to take a bench role.
Yeah.
That would be my greatest concern.
But do
we need to be a six man?
Do we have that concern with Cam Johnson? I don't.
Not as much. I think Cam Johnson has been... See, the thing is for me, like, Cam Johnson has been in the role that he's been in, and he's been a role player his entire career.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Kuzma has been this, like, oh, man, he could be... He's won a title, but B, he's been this kind of mythical... Not mythical, but this... Could he be the number one guy on a team?
Yeah.
Could he take on this bigger role? And that would be my concern there. But
okay.
Anyways, real quick, Kenny Caraway coming in for the handoff. I will get to that in just a moment. Matt Barrels from The Athletic tweeted this out today. And the 49ers odds, or chances, I should say, to win the NFC West aren't dead just yet. Here's all they need to win the NFC West. Ready?
Not quite dead yet.
First, they need to win out, which means you got to go to Miami and win. Then you have to host the Detroit Lions and win. And then you have to go to Arizona and win a game that Arizona might need to win the division. Okay. That's all you have to do. That's step one. Step two, you need the Seahawks and Rams to lose their next two games. The Seahawks play the Vikings and then the Bears. The Rams play, standby. The Rams play...
The Cardinals.
The Jets and the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Perfect. And then you got
no and then
no and then there's one more and then the Cardinals have to the Seahawks and Rams have to lose their next two games and then tie each other in their season finale, and then the Cardinals have to lose or tie against the 3-11 Panthers at home on Sunday. That's all you need. Kenny Caraway, here for the handoff.
You're telling me there's a chance.
I'm telling you there's a chance.
You had me until the Rams played the Jets. Then I was like, it ain't happening. Because to be honest with you.
The tying each other in the last game didn't.
That was after. That was after.
Oh, got it. Okay.
But everything you said before that, that could probably happen.
Well, that's why.
Niners could win out. The Seahawks could lose. At least Seahawks could lose out, but that wouldn't help. But
yeah,
and then you were like, "Oh, the Rams got to lose out, but they play the Jets." And I said, "Oh, damn!"
That's why when going into Thursday's game, the Niners had like a 4% chance or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And when you started looking at it, you go, "Okay, the Seahawks need to lose to the Vikings, and then they can beat the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
The Cardinals can beat the Panthers, and they who'd they play last week? The Patriots.
Yeah.
They can win those two games." Man, the Rams can beat the Jets. Like, hey, this isn't way out of the realm. And then Niners can lose one to the Dolphins or the Lions. Okay. And then they just 6 points.
The story of the 49ers season, like, they haven't been great. Injuries, all this other stuff. But it really did come down to those three conference games division games.
Yep, that's it.
They should have won.
Yep.
They should have beat the Rams. They should have beat the Cardinals. And they should have beat the Seahawks again.
Yep.
And even then, like, you can make the argument they should have won on Thursday, but I won't even say that. I'm just saying the one at L.A.
Mm-hmm.
that they were up 10 in the fourth quarter,
yep.
He did miss a field goal. That's what Ronnie Bell dropped. That would have gave you a game-winning field goal opportunity. The Cardinals game where you're ahead. Then it you fell apart? You fumbled. Mason fumbled at the 10,
mm-hmm.
at the Cardinal 10,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean, late in that game.
Yep.
And then wasn't it like 4th and 8 and Kyler is like backpedaling, turns without throwing, and it just you could talk about how.
Not their year, man.
Yeah, you could talk about how bad they are, but there's so many signs where it's just like,
mm-hmm.
hey, just. I don't want to say it's out of your control, but some of these things are just like, damn, like, what are you going to do?
Yeah. So. The NFL's hard.
Yeah.
It is. it's a difficult sport.
It's kind of what it comes down to.
Then you cannot be that good and still be 13-1.
I can't decide if I think they're going to lose in the first round or win the Super Bowl because of that. Like, are they going to get to the playoffs and play a bunch of playoff teams? And it's like, all right, the luck has run out. The real Chiefs are here. They lost by 17 to the Bills. Or is it like, yeah, hey, the Chiefs stumbled and fell and fumbled and their way to another championship.
Yeah, and they're getting healthy right now. You're watching. Yeah. The left tackle thing is a problem. And Mahomes
thing might be a problem, too.
Yeah, but the running back situation's gotten better. The wide receiver situation keeps getting better.
And they can get stopped straight up. Soren Smith said Chiefs defense legit.
Defense
they can
legit.
Get stopped.
Defense is legit, but ironically, like, teams have kind of moved on them a little bit. Like the Broncos game, the Chargers game.
The
Panthers game. I think the Chiefs defense is still one of the tops in the NFL, but even that is like, I don't want to say it's leaking oil, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, it's not as what it was in the first 3 weeks. Old E talks about Ronnie Bell dropping the ball, and I just think about Kyle Shanahan's reaction to that play.
Yeah.
Kyle couldn't believe – Kyle was all of us. He was right there in the TV screen, and he couldn't believe it.
I think it's because Kyle Shanahan knew that Ronnie Bell isn't very good at football.
He knew before we
he
did.
He was only up that day because Debo wasn't.
Damn.
Like, that's, yeah.
Kittle didn't play that game either, dude.
Correct.
Damn.
Yeah, man.
And Juwan Jennings had a career day.
Had a great day. Thing we've been talking about a lot today, and we have like 5 minutes here.
I was listening.
You putting Keegan Murray on the table for the right deal?
For the right deal, yeah.
Does it have to be? Because I used to say, not on the table unless Jaylen Brown says, I want out, and the Celtics say, okay, great, we want Keegan. But, or Jaylen Brown or somebody like that. He's more on the table than that for me now.
Yeah, he is. And hear me when I say this. I'm not saying I definitely would make this trade, but I'm thinking about it, like with a Brandon Ingram. I'm thinking about Trista had a proposed trade yesterday, and it was like too much. Like the totality of the trade was too much, but it really centered around Jeremy Grant and Keegan Murray.
Nah,
and I'm
not touching that.
I'm out.
Why not? Today is Jeremy Grant a better player than Keegan Murray?
Yes, today. Yeah.
You think he's going to be a better player next year? I think, I think he is personally.
Okay, so first of all, he's almost 31. Secondly, he makes so much money, it's ridiculous. Third, he doesn't rebound at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he's an inefficient scorer, shooting less than 40% from the field. Sure, he's shooting 38.4% from three. Like, he knows his job. I get that. But he's a huge defensive downgrade over Keegan. I'm not making
is
that
he?
Deal.
That's what I'm.
I don't know if he's a huge downgrade.
I think he's a little better defender than people give him credit for. Maybe.
I think he's an all right defender, but he averages 3.6 rebounds per game.
Sure,
that's
and for his career, he's at 4.
It's also a lot. Like it financially ties you up.
Right.
Like that's your move. Like that's it. Like now you have Jeremy Grant.
Right.
Yeah.
And that would be my hesitation more than like just in a vacuum, money doesn't matter.
Uh-huh.
If that makes sense.
And the thought also because you guys talked about it too, like Cam Johnson. 18 points a game not happening here. In this role, as being like your third or fourth best player, is he better than Keegan Murray?
I don't think he's your third or fourth best player. I think he's your fifth, no matter what.
Yeah.
Because I still
Keegan might be your fifth right now.
Keegan's definitely your fifth.
Yeah,
it's not even close.
Yeah, is he a better number five player than Keegan Murray?
I don't think so because he's not as versatile. He's not getting you the rebounds that you have to have because you have DeMar DeRozan as your small forward.
Yeah.
He's not as good a defender. He's not as strong a defender. I would have a tough time. And at $35 million a year, whatever it is, I'm not doing it. I wouldn't.
Well, Jeremy Grant or Cam Johnson?
What?
Jeremy Grant.
I agree.
The thing about that, though, is like we're talking about right now, like you're about to pay Keegan Murray a lot of money. Like he about to
maybe.
Get priced. Well, that now that's on the table, right? But like he about to get. It's cool right now when he's making X amount of dollars,
right?
But you're away from saying the same thing. Like you're giving me this for what I'm paying you.
Okay, so Jeremy Grant turns 31 this season. He's on the hook in his 32-year-old season at $32 million, followed by 34.2, followed by a player option at 36.4. No,
oof.
The money definitely matters, but I think they're at least even as a ball player. Now, Keegan's a better rebounder. I think they're closer defensively. But I think Jeremy Grant is a much more versatile offensive player.
I don't know that. Here's what I'll say, because you're going to be tied up financially with that move.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
That's it. And trading Jeremy Grant away is not going to be a movable contract.
Mm-hmm.
At least I don't think. Mm-hmm. So my concern there would be it's not if Jeremy Grant is better, like by whatever metric, if he is, I don't think it's enough of an upgrade to take on that financial.
You're about
cost.
To be tied up, though.
Well,
you're about to be tied up anyway.
I don't, but that's kind of the other aspect of the Keegan thing. I don't think they're paying Keegan 30 plus.
No, I don't think they are either. Not at this point.
Not to be the fifth guy.
All right, so what are we holding on to him so tightly for?
Well, I mean, for
if
me,
if you don't believe like he's that, if a year ago or whatever, we all thought like, hey, pay him like he's the future, mm-hmm. and now we don't think that he's worth what all these other rookies are getting mm-hmm. in their extension. And like, what are we holding on so tight for him for?
Because he's not a number two, number three scorer. That doesn't mean that he doesn't have a tremendous amount of value, especially to you as a franchise.
Yeah. I just think the contract is going to have to look different.
Yeah. And hey, look, if I'm the Kings, I'm doing everything in my power to use the other assets that I have, whatever those might be, to leverage before I touch that starting five. Yeah.
To answer your question before we get out of here, I wouldn't do the Jeremy Grant deal or whatever. I wouldn't mm-hmm. do all that other stuff. But Keegan is in the discussions now for certain players.
I think so. I think you're right. More of that coming up. On D'Lo and KC, yep. They're going to rock with you till 4. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. right here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. Until then, drink water and be nice, people. See ya!
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.